call this meeting to order. The time is 6:05. Today is Monday, February 13th, 2006. Present, we have Representative Crawford, Lynn, Co-Chair Ramirez, and Representative Coghill, and myself, Representative Newman. Let the record reflect, we have a quorum. Today we're going to take up the following legislation: House Bill 389, Tourist Accommodations, by Representative Coghill. And then House Bill 416, which is Business License Fees, by Representative Ramirez. Today we'll begin by welcoming, I guess, Representative Coghill and staff, Karen Linster. Karen, are you going to be presenting this bill?
Yes, she is. I tell you why. It's because I've been too busy to get my... Yeah, I know. No sympathy.
Thank you, Karen. Please state your name.
So, this bill, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 389, was brought to me by request. I asked the department to help me find places that we can undo things that are unnecessary, and so this is one of them. And so I'd ask that Ms. Lidster be able to explain it, since I've tasked her with digging into the details.
For the record, my name is Karen Lidster, and I am staff to Representative John Coghill. And as the representative said, this bill is in response to a request by the Department of Environmental Conservation to repeal legislation regarding the permitting requirements for tourist accommodations. The department currently does not enforce the statute, and tourist accommodations are regulated from annual water testing, health inspectors, fuel tank inspections, and the regulation of how many toilets have to be in a shower and those types of things. The tourist accommodations are heavily regulated as public accommodations, and if you turn to the specific sections that are going to be that we're asking to be repealed is 1835-040, which relates specifically to permits, and DEC no longer requires a permit, and 1835-050, which is the penalty for noncompliance for the permit requirement, which they no longer require a permit. In the final section that we are looking at, it's Alaska Statute 4464, and that goes back to the adjudicatory authority that DEC has, and it's the jurisdiction that they have. Section 030A16 states that it is relates to 1835-040, tourist accommodations, which we are asking be repealed. So in fact, this 4464030A16 also needs to be repealed. And that, quite simply, is what they're requesting, and I can answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
Just to prompt my staff to give us, since you told us what the specifics are, give us the 40,000-foot, say, this is what we're not going to do anymore.
We are not going to require a permit. We are not going to for tourist accommodations.
Mr. Chair, okay. Would I be wrong at this point to ask for the Director of Environmental Health to explain what these statutes actually were intended to do, what they're not doing?
Thank you, Representative Coghill. That's the direction that I was going to try and ask. You know, we've got a whole bunch of numbers that are in front of me here, but let's find exactly what this pertains to. If we could briefly, online we have the Director of Environmental Health, Kristen Ryan. Kristen, are you there?
I am.
Could you help this committee out and explain this a little bit to us?
Sure. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health, and the Food Safety and Sanitation Program is the program that regulates hotels and tourist accommodations through regulations, which are 18 AAC 30. we have not, those regulations were last drafted in 1982 and need to be updated, but as long as I've been able to tell, as far back as I have been able to research, we have not permitted tourist accommodations for at least since 1982. We do complaint investigations. We do inspections if a complaint arises, and I've got a log here in front of me of various complaints we've investigated over the years. But the requirement of permitting those facilities adds a layer of paperwork that isn't necessarily helpful in what we're doing. The risk is extremely low compared to other facilities that this program inspects. The kitchens, for example, and those accommodations are still inspected and regulated under the food safety regulations. The tourist accommodation sanitation statutes and regulations just address the rooms, basically, of the facility and making sure they're clean and sanitary. The bill proposed by Representative Coghill does not remove or eliminate the department's obligation to set sanitary standards for tourist accommodations. We still will do that. It just removes our requirement to permit and require that permit to be posted and fine them if they don't post it, which all those three things we are not doing and haven't done, as far as I can tell, since 1982.
Christian, could you identify what a tourist accommodation is? I don't want to be imposing on some guide who's got something out there on some river. Could you please tell us what a tourist accommodation is?
It's quite broad. It's basically any place that provides lodging for the public for a fee. So it would include a hotel, an RV park. It includes lodges. So does that answer your question?
Yes, somewhat. So again, is this so if I'm a hunting guide, where do I fall in under this? And also, I'd like to recognize Representative Stoltz has joined us. If you'd like to come up and join us up front here.
Oh, tempting, but thank you.
just is a tourist accommodation, would this affect guides, hunting guides, fishing guides?
Representative, I don't believe so. I mean, I'm trying to think of a situation where it would. Now, if there was a fishing guide who had a lodge, for example, on the Kenai River, they are already regulated, depending on how large they are, to varying degrees by different programs. We don't permit them now, and so the repeal of this requirement would just be in step with what our current practices are. So there would be no change in the regulations of those facilities if we're regulating them now.
Okay. Just I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but this doesn't mean somebody with a tent out in the woods.
No, it doesn't mean if somebody has a camp. We have a special permit for camps or transient that's geared toward guides and hunters in particular. And it's kind of we're working on it right now with some constituent groups to improve it. It's definitely not up to par from what they would like, but it's kind of an all-encompassing permit that covers your food, your wastewater, your garbage disposal, and drinking water. It includes everything that DEC regulates to varying degrees, and it steps up depending on the size of your camp.
Thank you, Christian. Do we have any other questions from this committee to Ms. Ryan or the sponsor of this bill? Seeing none, hearing none, do we have anybody in the audience who'd like to comment on this bill? Seeing and hearing none, committee at this time, with any further discussion on this bill? What are the wishes of this committee?
I know, Chairman. No, my wish is, Mr. Chairman, do I make the motion? My wish
is. Are you a member of this committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we move House Bill 389 out of committee with individual recommendations and no attached fiscal note.
See no objection. This bill here moves out of committee.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. That has a zero fiscal note.
With attached recommendations, individual recommendations, and fiscal notes. Next, we'll be welcoming Representative Ramirez and his staff, Jim Pound. I guess Jim is going to be talking to us about this. House Bill 416.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Pound, staff representative Ramirez. House Bill 416 will revise a change that the legislature made in statute about 3 years ago when we were looking for other sources of revenue with low oil prices. It sends a message that Alaska is opened for business, especially small business. By reducing our business license fees back to $25 from their current $100 annually, people who have an idea that they feel they could make into a business will be more willing to pursue it. HB 416 removes the burden placed on many small businesses when the state was searching for more money. With oil at an all-time high and not expected to ever drop back to the record lows we saw several years ago, and with natural gas on the horizon, HB 416 is good for basic Alaska economy by supporting those mom-and-pop companies that would like to do business in the state. Appreciate your support on this bill and be glad to answer any questions.
I would like to make a comment as a small business owner. Myself, I appreciate the intent of this bill. I have heard from multiple other small business owners who appreciate the intent. To reduce this, I feel personally that it will encourage more people to have a business license. It'll help our folks from OCC license do their job better. Any other comments from the committee? Representative Ramirez?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal note on this is significant. It's $4.25 million per year. And it's that much going out. But I'd like to remind the committee that this is a newly adopted increase in charges. And I'm often reminded, because I'm kind of new around the bend here to government, as Representative Coghill subtly reminds me all the time, and sometimes by the things he says and sometimes by the things he doesn't say, and for both of which I'm grateful. And I'm reminded that 90% of our revenues are driven by the oil and gas industry. And I'm also, like everybody at this table, have watched the internet commerce world go from a baby business to now a multi-billion dollar business. And one of the primary reasons cited by the President and the U.S. Congress as to why we don't have a sales tax associated with business done on the internet is because we're still growing. We're still growing the internet. And when I look at Alaska commerce, non-oil and gas related, it's still very much in its infant stage, and it should be nurtured. And although for larger small businesses and medium-sized businesses and large businesses, the business license fee amounts to a nuisance tax, nevertheless, it's a red light, green light in our small burgeoning Alaska economy. And I think, as Representative Stoltz will suggest in his testimony, that there are people that maintain multiple business licenses for multiple businesses, that people want to be legal, and that this amounts to something that retards growth in our economy that's non-oil and gas related. And so I am an advocate in these times where we're seeing surpluses, not to just accept this burden that was put on small business, thank you, to accept this burden that was put on small business and then never review it or rethink it. And I have a note here also, Mr. Chairman, that we need to move the CS for HB 416 as well.
Chair, I'd move a CS for 416.
Is that version F?
Yes, version F, for discussion purposes.
The CS is admitted. Any questions from the committee? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's more a comment than it is a question. I oppose raising the business tax a couple of years ago when it was introduced. I thought it was the wrong idea at the time, and I think it's a good thing that we're repealing it today.
Representative Lynn?
I think this is a good bill. Anytime that the government can lower taxes, I think that's good. The taxes are not needed unless they're needed. And sometimes you get a tax on anything, and no one ever wants to bring it down. I think this sends a good message that when the tax is no longer needed, that we don't need it, and we will, in fact, reduce it.
Thank you. No online testimony on this bill? Is there anybody in the local audience? Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Chairman Newman. I'll make this really brief. My name is Bill Stoltz. I'm a state representative for House District 16. I voted for the increase in the 23rd legislature, and it's one of those that perhaps in the circumstances which we were faced at that time, it was a close call whether it was the right thing to do or not. And it's but certainly one I've had a lot of personal questions about. It's certainly was a revenue measure to fill a significant gap. It's one I've had a considerable amount of feedback on from my constituents, and it's hasn't been necessarily the volume or of them, but it's the intensity of the folks that have. They are small entrepreneurs, many struggling small family businesses, often engaging in the use of multiple business licenses because they're engaging in so many different enterprises, which we have in the challenge of our seasonal economies. And it's certainly one that's come home, and I've made a pledge to try to address that effect on their ability to make a living in the free enterprise system. It's certainly difficult in a state with all the challenges we have. I see this is the appropriate subject for the Economic Development Committee because it does affect commerce and business in Alaska. Certainly there'll probably be more substantial discussion on at later phases in the committee process, finance and how it affects the bottom line of our state budget, and that certainly there'll have to be some hard questions answered and judgment calls based on that. But I think this is the appropriate step for this committee to move the bill out, if that's indeed the desire, because it's a reflection of this committee and through its creation and on representing the business aspect and the economic development of Alaska. At the very lowest levels where the most productivity often occurs and the greatest job creation, often below the radar we see.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stoltz, I'm going to ask you the same question that you asked in the Finance Committee hearing I was at. I have a Ledge research report in my packet. And I have a fiscal note. Nowhere can I tell how many business licenses were sold in the state of Alaska. And this must be a great mystery number or something. Have you had any luck in determining what that figure is?
Yeah, Co-Chair Ramirez through Co-Chair Newman. It's been a frustrating aspect for me dealing with the Department of Revenue. It was almost like a Keystone Cop approach to trying to find it. They said, well, it's clearly here. Well, no, look on the footnote on page 43. Well, it really refers to the footnote on page 72 in the further footnotes, as you probably recall. And it's, I thought it should be for something that was a significant state policy enacted just a scant 3 years ago, it should be very clearly delineated. And frankly, it's out of frustration not being able to find. Here's the number of business licenses and a very clear, if nothing else through this process, I'd sure like to be able to understand that aspect of the budget. And as Representative Ramirez has observed, it's been through two budget processes of overviews, not getting clear information. I wanted to know both empirically and anecdotally, as there have been more or less business licenses sold, and that should be very clearly delineated in our revenue source books. And it should be a separate category. But when information is obfuscated like that, I'm a suspicious guy, and as my friends from Missouri say, show me, and that's part of the process I hope to unveil here. maybe not at this committee, but we're there's many purposes for this. And it's not for a lack of, I think you probably observed me, and I did the same thing the previous year. You know, the folks I represent, and I feel like they were blowing off the people I represent, and that I really take umbrage at that. And that's probably enough editorial comment.
Representative Coghill?
So in the backup here, we say approximately 74,000, and that's as close as you've been able to get?
Beg your pardon?
In the backup material we have, they say approximately 74,000 business licenses, but you can't find out what was before that and what's come in since this change?
Representative Coghill, to the chairman, it's through the budget revenue source books, and it should be a very clear document. No, there's no clear delineation. As I believe Representative Ramirez may have similar comments from being through the same process.
We do have Rick Urien here from the Division of Occupational Licensing. Maybe he can answer those questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Also, may I remind members of the committee, too, that a lot of businesses hold several businesses' licenses because they're required to hold a different business license for different operations within their primary business. So, Rick, if you could name, state your name and title for us and answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And I'm here this evening not to either be for or against the bill before you. It's a matter in your hands. But I want to clarify the last statements I just heard. Let me assure you, we can tell you exactly how many business licenses we've sold this year. We can tell you exactly how many business licenses we sold last year. And we can tell you exactly how many business licenses we've sold every year. We have those figures. I don't know what books we're looking at, but I can tell you that we know exactly what the number is, and we can give you those numbers. I don't know what's in the budget books, but we have those figures.
But you don't have those figures with you?
No, I didn't bring those figures with me. I didn't. I never imagined that was an issue. Ramirez?
That's why everybody likes you. You just nailed it. That's why you're a straight talker. You're a good man. Thank you.
The bill before you, as you know, as Representative Rambo said, is going to cost money, and that's your choice. When we first came aboard, when the Murkowski administration first came aboard, our division was charged, our department was charged with trying to generate more revenue to pay for the services that we provide. And there we have very few sources of revenue, and one of them is business license. It is a tax. It is a source of revenue. We increased it from $25 a year to $100 a year. It's the first and only time it's been increased since 1949 when the license law went on the books. There has never been a person in the history of the state or territory that's been fined for not having a business license. And contrary to other statements, let me tell you, I don't think we thought we would affect business license a whole lot more than what we did when we increased the price by 400%. I think the same people that didn't buy it at $25 didn't buy it at $100, and the people who don't buy it at $100 are not going to buy it when you go to $25.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much did you say you increased the license fee?
Went from $25 a year to $100 a year.
The percentage that you said.
That's 400%, isn't it?
Thank you.
Yeah. But the numbers of business licenses stayed the same, essentially the same. It didn't. I thought we'd drop off 20%. It dropped off some, but since we now have we allow a one-year license, it's hard to tell the effect of that. So we have a lot of people with two-year licenses and one-year license. But let me tell you how the license, what the money goes to fund, yeah. Just so you know what you're doing, because you won't hurt us one bit if you cut it back to $25. You will not hurt my division at all. The money that we get goes toward budgetary items. The biggest recipient of these funds is the Alaska tourism industry, ATIA, $2.5 million. We give them that for their advertising campaign. Trade and Market Office of Economic Development gets $1,141,000. Our community advocacy and our division gets $85,000. And we get $1.4 million to run our operation. Legislative grants, $400,000. The governor's office, $615,000. Department of Revenue. We give money to the Department of Revenue Tax Division. I really like to know what they spend the money for. We give them $1.3 million. And so those funds, you will have to make up from somewhere else if you do away with the revenue.
Representative Cotton?
What was the time frame that you said it was set at 25?
1949.
49,
okay.
Representative Lynn? Did I hear correctly that in the history of Alaska that no one has ever received a fine or whatever for not getting a business license?
That's correct.
Why? I mean, what's the point of having a license if no one ever collects a fine or not have a license? That wouldn't work with automobile licenses, registrations, or any. Well, I'm just amazed.
Representative Lynn, before you sits the person who's probably the least regulator, least less of a bureaucrat than you'll find in most divisions. Not somebody who wants to punish somebody. All we want to do is get them in compliance. You get your business license and everything is fine.
Well, everything's fine if I don't get it, if no one comes after me if I don't get it.
That's true. That's one thing that I would ask that you change. We have no way of getting after them. It's a $2,000 fine. It's never, the Department of Law would never go after someone with a $2,000 fine. If you go to $25, I would ask that you put into law, make it a misdemeanor so we could like write a speeding ticket for $25 or $100. Or somebody can collect a fine to force someone to get a license. Be a lot easier to enforce.
At one time, Mr. Chairman, I had a business license for selling landscape photographs, and I dutifully got the license. I guess I could have saved $25. And
there's a lot of people out there operating businesses without business licenses. There are a lot of corporations out there operating corporations without business licenses.
Something needs to be done.
We're trying to do that, sir.
Thank you.
Another thing that you could do if you decided not to totally repeal or go back to $25, I heard the complaint about multiple businesses and needing multiple licenses. With a very slight change of the law, you could allow someone to have multiple lines of business with one business license. I think that's a good idea. But the law says we have to sell a business license for every line of business you have.
Mr. Chairman, we're just checking. We had... Give me just one second.
Do we have any other questions from the committee members in the meantime?
I do.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Urien. In Section 1, we did put on line 6 and 7, the person is guilty of an infraction and may be fined up to $50. If you start on line 5, I'm sorry, with E, if a person knowingly engages in a business in the state without having a current license issued under A of this section, the person is guilty of an infraction and may be fined up to $50. Is that severe enough in your estimation?
That is severe enough.
Okay. And then you would recommend that somebody make a conceptual amendment to further consolidate business licenses, or do you feel that... What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, it depends if you're going to go to $25 a license, it probably doesn't make much of a difference, but you could still do that. You could, and I could bring you the amendment that would allow you to do that. I don't have that before me. It's the section that allows, says we sell a business license for each line of business. If you change that to lines of business, you could have multiple. You know, the husband could plow snow in the wintertime and be a landscaper in the summertime, and the wife could make dolls or have a babysitting operation or whatever it was, as long as they operate under the same business name. If you change your business name, then you have to have a different license. Even with the $25, you'll have to have a business license, different license.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ramirez.
This bill goes to Labor and Commerce, so if you would help us by providing that amendment, if it leaves this committee, and we could take a look at it in Labor and Commerce and consider it there.
I'll do that.
And one other thing, Ms. Sharon, where did all that when we increased funding and money went to ATIA and some of the other agencies you talked about, where were they finding funding from before, or was that a new funding source for them when the business license fee was increased?
that was a new funding source for them when the business license increased. Part of that comes from general funds. You folks would appropriate that in the budget.
I see. So instead of, if I can follow up, so instead of getting the money from the GF, they then started to get the money from the business license revenue. So presumably after the last 2 years, they would have to go back and get that money from the GF if they were to. I see. Okay. Thank you. I just appreciate that. Just helping the new guy.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Just as a comment, I remember the discussion when we voted for this, and it's a pretty good sized jump. There's no doubt about it. And I guess I'm going to have to declare a little bit of a conflict. My wife had to go buy one of these things, and she had to buy it under the larger amount. And I'm always reluctant to change things rapidly. It was painful enough to go up. And the rationale that, you know, you could buy a car in the 1940s for a whole lot less than you can buy a car for now. And so if you take the cost of or the value of a dollar as far as a business tax, because that's what it is, it's your entrance into doing business in Alaska. The 40s, 50s, 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, 1990s without a change, when I can remember going to a theater for $5, and I know you can't do that anymore. And that was 25 years ago. So I'm always reluctant now to say, okay, for this cohort, we're going to charge you because we had a justification based on inflation or the cost of compliance checks and stuff like that. Certainly the cost of wages today for compliance is quite different than it was in the 40s. So now you have people that have went ahead and said, we'll be good citizens, we'll pay the license fee, and now we're going to go back and create another cohort, and we're going to leave them in that bubble. And I don't think we're going to probably have the money to reimburse them. And so I'm going to be reluctant to go back down this road. And I, when I voted for it painfully, but I thought with good reason. So I'm not going to stop it in committee, but it may not get my vote when it gets to the floor, if it should. If the multiple license issue is in there, that may be enough to convince me. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good idea. So I just want us to think about, before we go and take it off the books, that we ponder those who we've already put in that spot, and then the time value of money from the 1940s till now. So I'm going to go cautiously is what I'm saying.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what the difference for me on this question is the difference between a fee and a tax. A fee is supposed to be the amount of money that the government charges to run that program, or to run that department, or to run the service. And a tax is a revenue measure that's designed to take in money to run the general fund. And I don't know what the actual amount is that that's required for Commissioner Urien to run his department. But if all that money was going to other areas that basically I think should be paid for in the general fund, I don't think that this was truly a fee. It was a tax. It was a revenue measure, and we just didn't call it that. And I would like to get to the point where, you know, we call a spade, if it's a business license fee, then I think that it ought to be reflected as such. If it's a business tax, then that's a horse of a different color. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any more testimony from the audience or online? Seeing and hearing none, do we have any further discussion from the committee? Representative Lynn?
Oh, no, if, when you're ready to move the bill, I'll be happy to move the bill.
Is this the wish of this committee? Representative Lynn?
Mr. Chairman, the reason I stated I'd be happy to move CS for House Bill 416 DT 24-LS1555-F with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Seeing no objections, this bill passes from this committee this time. Before we adjourn, committee members, we have been joined by some folks from the Future Farmers of America. I believe the Future Farmers of America have a lot of input in our economic development, trade, tourism, a lot of the issues that we deal with here on a day-to-day basis. They, in their own way, also have their own involvement in that. I'd like to invite these folks to come up and talk to the committee a little bit about what they do, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Rammers?
Thank you. If I may, it's going to be my intent, with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I want to introduce a resolution shortly from this committee so that we have a vehicle, and the resolution is going to be branding Alaska's produce for the visitor industry. We presently have about a million cruise ship tourists that travel to Alaska each year, and then another 500,000 tourists that then take a correlating six-night tour through the state of Alaska. That's 1.5 million tour days in the state, 1.5 million tour guests taking six-night packages. So 1.5 million times 6 nights is 9 million, times breakfast, lunch, and dinner is 27 million meals, breakfast, lunches, and dinners. And those tourists do not know whether they're eating Alaskan carrots or lower 48 carrots, or broccoli, or potatoes, or alfalfa sprouts. A lot of the produce is coming out of the Delta region and the Mat-Su region. And I'm interested in generating a resolution. I've been working with the Alaska Hotel Lodging Association, as well as with the Alaska Tourism Industry Association, as well as with Carol, what's her last name?
Lewis,
who is the Dean of Agricultural and Natural Resources, and Larry DeVilbiss, Director of Agriculture, and with Bill Stoltz, Representative Stoltz, and we're trying to coordinate an effort to elevate Alaska produce to enjoy the same prestige as wild Alaska salmon, Walla Walla onions, Granny Smith apples. Our produce, because of the way it grows, not only are tourists fascinated with our cabbages, but our carrots and our potatoes enjoy a high sugar and high water content that makes them much sweeter than other produce. And we want to start a campaign so that tourists will know that this is another dynamic of eating here. And when I was visiting with the FFA people earlier today, they were telling me about what impact this would have on the workforce, and that FFA is a lot more than just livestock. So with your indulgence, I'd love to. We have three people here from FFA. Jeff Werner is hosting two members of the FFA, Jessica Nolan, who's back in the audience, and then Hannah Harrison, who would be speaking. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd give it back to you. But we're going to be putting together a resolution here in the next few days that we'd like to offer from the EDT committee.
Thank you, Representative Rammers. And Hannah.
Good evening, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name for the record.
Hannah Harrison. I am currently the state president of the Alaska Association of the FFA, or the Future Farmers of America. Jessica Nolan is a past state FFA president, and Mr. Warner is our current state FFA advisor. What Mr. Ramirez has presented with you tonight is an incredible opportunity to broaden Alaska's economic and industrial future, as well as a partnership with the up-and-coming youth of Alaska, such as those in the FFA. The FFA is an organization that's based around three key objectives: premier leadership for Alaska's youth and for Alaska's growth in tomorrow, personal growth and, of course, career success in Alaska's industry and economy. As the FFA, we will be an unwavering partner to show stewardship with this new idea that Mr. Ramirez has presented to you. We have already showed loyalty and success to the Alaska Grown label and the opportunities that it has provided for the state thus far. And we know we can continue to share that vision of growth, especially with this new idea. However, the idea that he has presented is a seed, and the FFA an unwavering soil bed for it to be planted in. But no seed can flourish without support, and that is what we are here to encourage from you. We need your support so that this idea can flourish into a brand new opportunity for Alaska's economy and for Alaska's youth, most especially. You sit there because you have been put in charge of making decisions and using opportunities presented to you, such as this one, to improve Alaska's future. And thus, we are hoping that you will offer that support for this new idea. Without it, though we want to be a good partner for this, we can't succeed very far. So we are hoping for that. Are there any questions that I can answer for you, Mr. Chair?
Anna, could you tell us a little bit about what is all-encompassing in FFA? What programs are you involved in?
I myself personally involved in many of the leadership opportunities, such as public speaking, civic leadership, and civic involvement. The FFA is often known for things like livestock and cattle, poultry, things like that, but it extends far beyond that, especially in Alaska. We have such a great opportunity to explore careers and growth in natural resources as well as agriculture through our tourism and the amazing resources we have here. So what we try and provide for students in the classroom as well as in career searching is opportunities to explore what Alaska has to offer so that they can stay here in this state and eventually fill the positions that you hold now. We want to train people to become Alaska's leaders instead of just people who like to live here, although that works too. As well as, you know, career success is a really big part of our program. We want to make sure that Alaska's job force for tomorrow is educated and then can make intelligent decisions as far as leading Alaska into whatever future we want it to be.
Thank you, Hannah. And Representative Lynn?
I just wanted to make a comment. I thought that, you know, we're promoting Alaska wild salmon for all the obvious reasons, and I just think this concept of marketing Alaska grown vegetables because of their uniqueness is a fantastic idea. You know, it has some real potential, and I'd like to see us pursue that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, if I may say, traveling on my own nickel, Representative Coghill. No. I mean, I might be pleased with me. I went ahead and had a meeting with the people from Princess, and talked to them about precisely this idea, and I was talking to Charlie Ball, who's the president of Princess, and his light bulb went off, and he said, I get it. This is about wild Alaska blueberry scones and Matsu fireweed honey that we can serve on our rail cars. And he said the travel writers will like it because they're so fascinated with Alaska produce, and that they will it's good for the industry. It's good for branding Alaska. It is complementary to our seafood, just positive for it's a win-win for everybody, for Matsu and the Delta areas, as well as for the visitor industry. That it's one more remarkable facet for the guests that visit Alaska each year to go home and talk about, which is, boy, Alaska grows the very best carrots I've ever had in my life, and the same thing with our potatoes. And so, Rep Stoltz and Rep Newman and I have been working on is to be able to present to the ATIA in April when they have a Juneau meeting some table tents that will be able to feature that kind of these kind of products, so that tourists, as they move through Alaska, can learn about our carrots and our potatoes, and hopefully they'll begin to enjoy a distinctive brand-like flavor profile and be more unique, because the Alaska Grown program has been wildly successful in the Safeways and in the Fred Meyers. But most tourists don't get exposed to Alaska Grown, and they don't go into our grocery stores. They're eating it on ships, at hotel restaurants, and at tour-based restaurants. And we would like to come up with some uniform potato products and uniform carrot products, where as they leave Alaska, they will talk about our carrots in the same way that, you know, Walla Walla onions have taken. You know, I see them for sale on the street corner up in Fairbanks a couple of times a year. And so that's kind of our plan. And there was a terrific response from the tourism the tourism leaders, the cruise ship leaders. So it's something that we want to pursue, and we think that doing it as a resolution through EDT is pretty consistent with the mission of this committee. So we'd like to put that together, keep the committee apprised of it, get it on the move, and then be able to present it to the ATIA when it's appropriate in the spring.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez. I think that's something that, again, that we'll work on. This is a committee thing, and make sure that it happens. And I do have to caution our other legislators here that in discussions that I had with Hannah earlier today, she's very interested in the legislative process and suggested that she may like to become a legislator one day. And I said, well, I looked at where she's from, and I said, well, I'm certainly glad you're from Homer and not Big Lake.
I might want to come down my district either. Don't move in the
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great job, Hannah.
And any other
Mr. Chairman,
from the committee?
I just wanted to bring to the members' attention a little book that I put on your desk. The author of that book I've invited to come up, and I'm going to ask the two chairmen if you would have him speak in front of the committee. And so I wanted to kind of apprise you that I've already made the invitation. He'll be up here the 27th. And I would suggest you look at it, starting from the from home to market. For those who are here from our marketplace in the world, is going to be kind of the view of this committee. And this talks about commercial diplomacy and how the United States uses it throughout the world. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to see, from that perspective, how Alaska looks. And so, or how people see us from the outside. So that might help us think through some of the issues on this committee as well, especially since we're going to be talking about everything from oil and gas to coal and gas exports, so or tourism imports. So I think that those are all integral. And appreciate the Future Farmers of America showing the initiatives at the right, what you call hometown level. And appreciate your chairman's efforts in that. I just wanted to bring in somebody who had a big impact on me, and we're in the global part of the world. We want to make sure that we take a good look at it. And so that was my intention. I would encourage you to read it, though. At the very least, the introduction part, the first chapter, and there's a conclusion. The rest is how they've done it throughout the world, and there's a lot of good examples. I would just indulge you. And so here's your copy. I bought it from my office account, so it's not like it was a personal sacrifice for me, but at least I took the initiative.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Representative Coghill. And I had the opportunity to go through this book and had the advantage of some of these areas highlighted, actually Representative Coghill's book. Great information, things that I didn't know. The U.S. does about 23% of the gross domestic product, 15% of all world trade. Fantastic reading. Certainly welcome Mr. Kopp. If that is all for tonight, we'll call this meeting to a close. Thank you, folks.